ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brand. Welcome to the program this Friday lunchtime. Today you'll hear about a native bush tea that is getting harvested on a territory station and sold to the world.
The tea is an amazing tea. We found that some of these bush foods are actually the next frontier of new flavours and new ideas for the culinary world.
You'll also today find out who won the NT Rural Women's Award for 2026. And the boss of the Bureau of Meteorology says his organisation is not forecasting a super El Nino, despite what you might have seen in the media.
Well, super El Nino is definitely not a bureau term, that's a press term. There's no clarity at the moment about whether we're going to have a strong El Nino, a weak El Nino, or some other outcome.
And we've also got some news about a sweet fertiliser deal that has just been struck between Australia and Indonesia. Lots on today's Country Hour. Let's get amongst it. We are broadcasting right across the territory on the ABC, and g'day if you've tuned in via the podcast. Now, if you own a firearm, you've got until the end of today to get in touch with Territory Police and provide your details to the National Firearms Register. Now, this register requires all NT gun licence holders to initially do what is called a self-check. We're joined this afternoon by Grant Hatcher, who is from the NT Firearms Council. Afternoon to you, Grant.
Hey, mate. How you going?
I'm not too bad. First up, can you explain to our audience why all of this is happening?
Yeah, it was all decided on at a federal level back in 24 after the police shootings in Queensland, that a National Firearms Register should be developed. It had sort of been there in a quasi way for a little while, but yes. And then obviously what happened with Bondi has sped things up a little bit more. So yeah, so the Territory's a fair way down the path to getting it sorted.
And today is the deadline. Have NT police told you just how many firearms have been registered through the self-check?
Yeah, I contacted the NFR team this morning and just got the latest figures, and they're currently sitting at around about 80% of all firearms in the NT have had photographs taken, so at least they've been submitted. Even if they haven't completed all their work at their end, it means that the licence holders have got on with getting the job done. So I think, like last time that we spoke a few weeks ago, the council, along with a lot of the clubs in Darwin, like SSAA, Field and Game, Top End Practical Shooting League, Darwin Pistol Club, Top End Gun Club, we all organised and ran sessions where people could bring their firearms along, and the NFR team were there. So they were very successful. We did approximately 700 firearms, got done that way. And the teams have been in Alice Springs and Tennant Creek this past week, with around 283 done at Alice and 24 at Tennant Creek. So that's some pretty good results there.
What are the ramifications for people who don't get this done by the end of today?
I think there'll be a little bit of leeway without speaking out of school, especially in the regional areas. The teams have sort of said that they're, for the remainder of 2026, we'll work in with the regional remote location people to get their outstanding updates in and done, because obviously, you know, there's the tyranny of distance. There's a lot of areas have been affected with flooding, as you guys well know. So, you know, there's all those things to take on board. If you're in the greater Darwin area, I would suggest if you haven't done it, you need to get it done. If you're not confident in doing it yourself, you can go to Palmerston Police Station and get it done there. You just need to book in with the NFR team. So if you Google up, it's National Firearms Register at pfes.nt.gov.au. You can make a booking, take your firearms there, and the team will sort it out for you.
Grant, a question from our audience. I got a message saying, my guns were already registered. I still don't understand why I needed to do all of this.
Yeah, it's another step on from registration. So basically what it does, it identifies the firearm from cradle to grave, so to speak. So I think, once again, we discussed this a little bit last time, that, you know, you can have a specific type of firearm that may be quite common, but it might be made in 5 different factories overseas. So they, what they do is identify that particular firearm all the way back to its point of origin.
Also, I called a mate in New South Wales about this National Firearms Register and the deadline of this afternoon, and he didn't know anything about all of this.
No, and I'll back that up by saying I was in Cairns last week visiting family, and I went to a gun shop there and asked them about, you know, were they doing NFR and NFID numbers for guns, and I got this blank stare from the other side of the counter. They knew nothing about it either, but I'll guarantee you they will be doing it, so it's just a matter of time. So pretty much at the moment, I think the Territory's leading the way on it.
It's a National Firearms Register. I don't understand why all the jurisdictions aren't just running on the same timeline.
Yes, I would agree with you on that.
It's nuts.
Politics is a funny thing.
Too right. So if the Territory's leading the way and today's the deadline for providing these details, this self-check, what happens next for the Northern Territory?
Well, there's still a fair bit of work to be done. I think that the actual register itself, from what I've been told, won't be up and running until about 2028. So obviously the guys doing all this have got a fair backlog of information now that they've got to go and sort out. So whilst 80% of the firearms have been photographed, it doesn't mean that they've all been completely processed. So there's a fair bit of work there still to be done, which is probably going to take them into next year, I would think.
Thanks for your time this afternoon. Really appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks, Matt.
Good on you. That is Grant Hatcher. He is from the NT Firearms Council. So just repeating, if you do own a gun, you've got until the end of today to get in touch with NT Police and provide your details for this National Firearms Register. I'm joined in the studio by the big gun himself, Tom Robinson. You've been talking to NT Police about what does happen if someone doesn't meet this deadline. What's our understanding on what happens?
So there's no blanket extension to the deadline. That's the word used by Northern Territory Police. There's no blanket extension, but if you're a licence holder who provides a genuine reason for being unable to complete the requirements by today, you will be directly assisted by the Northern Territory Police to finalise submissions. Licence holders within the Greater Darwin area who have not yet completed their self-check form will be contacted in due course and provided with further direction. So they're not, my read of it is, they're not going to like kick your door in.
Fantastic. Fantastic. All right. Thank you very much. It is 22-1 and you are tuned into the Country Hour. Are you after some fertiliser? Got some good news for you next.
Hello, my name is Julie Roy, acting coordinator for Eagle Monkey Rangers, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
Yep, some good news for Aussie farmers on the hunt for fertiliser. A deal has been struck to import an extra 250,000 tonnes of urea from our friends in Indonesia. The Federal Ag Minister, Julie Collins, says the government, along with Incitec Pivot, have been working hard to get fertiliser for farmers.
So we're talking about an additional 250,000 tonnes of urea coming from Indonesia, and this is a commercial deal, but obviously our government has supported this with our discussions with the Indonesian government.
Yeah, what role did the federal government play if it was a commercial deal?
Well, obviously the facilitation and talking to and supporting the company, because obviously the company that the commercial deal has been done with is an Indonesian government company.
And what is the time frame to get the fertiliser into the country and then also into Tasmania?
Well, we're hearing sometime in June, but we've just heard it could be as early as May. So certainly we do have enough fertiliser and urea, particularly in Australia, for the initial planting season. But this is about providing some surety for farmers going forward.
And how will it be divided up between the states?
Well, obviously that'll be on commercial demand and distribution, and Incitec Pivot will be organising that on a commercial basis.
And I understand there is still a shortfall that the government needs to resolve. What is the current shortfall for fertiliser for the coming cropping season?
Yeah, and this is quite the question. And so last planting season we used around 8 million tonnes of urea. This planting season we expect to use around 6 million. That was the estimate. And ABARES has done the modelling and we had a shortfall. And this is about 20% of that shortfall, the 250,000 tonnes. So we are getting closer to getting as much as we need for this current planting season, which runs through to October.
So still quite a shortfall, 80% or so. What is the government doing to resolve that shortfall?
Well, we are talking obviously to our usual suppliers, but also not just in Southeast Asia, and we're having those discussions, and you've seen our Prime Minister go around and visit some of those countries that do supply us. But we're also talking globally and trying to source that urea from everywhere we possibly can, and we're getting it from right across the globe from places we've never got it before, which is also why, of course, we made the announcement yesterday in relation to our speeding up and streamlining some of our biosecurity processes to make sure that there's no delays in getting it into the country.
So sourcing urea from countries that we haven't sourced it from before, does that carry extra risks as well too?
It does indeed, and that's why we are making sure that we do our biosecurity risks, and there's no risk to biosecurity. But we're doing things like being able to take a sample on board before the product arrives in Australia, having an authorised processing happen offshore and the registration of it offshore.
Will there be any price impact for farmers and producers as part of this, these arrangements that the government...
Well, obviously they'll be on prevailing market prices, but certainly surety and additional supply will provide support for farmers, and it will give farmers confidence in terms of their planting.
Yeah. Is there any overall risk to the current, to the upcoming growing season then, just generally as part of this whole Iran conflict and Strait of Hormuz situation? Are there broader risks that our producers are facing?
Well, obviously our farmers are used to adapting and they're pretty innovative. They have a whole range of risks, primarily the weather, of course, and we've seen our farmers deal with some really difficult situations in terms of floods and bushfires and drought over the years, and they're very innovative and adaptive. But this, you know, war in the Middle East is impacting globally, and it's even impacting here at home in Tasmania. And as a federal government, our job is to shield them as much as we can and support them as much as we can, and that's certainly what we have been doing.
Yeah. So more announcements can be expected in the coming months as well then?
Well, we're obviously dealing with immediate challenges, but we're also planning for medium and long term and working with the industry on what those immediate challenges are, and then the more longer term challenges, and working with them on how we resolve them.
That is the Federal Agriculture Minister Julie Collins speaking to Adam Holmes about this fertiliser deal that's been struck with Indonesia, an extra 250,000 tonnes of urea. The National Farmers Federation is a fan. I'm joined in the studio again by Tom Robinson. What has the NFF had to say?
NFF President Hamish McIntyre has sent a statement saying that this is obviously a very welcome step and will go a long way to restoring confidence for farmers as we move into the winter growing season. This 250,000 tonnes of urea provides certainty and is about 20% of the remaining fertiliser needed for the season ahead. He says it's a clear demonstration of how important Australia's international trading relationships are, with Indonesia stepping up at the right time.
Thank you, Indonesia. Ashley Brooks is a grain grower from Dimboola in Victoria. She was on ABC TV just a moment ago and said every bit of urea helps.
Yeah, it's definitely a really positive announcement. I think, you know, as growers, we are entering one of our most critical times of year. So this announcement certainly provides us with a little bit more reassurance at a time when we've all been very concerned about input availability, so not only fertiliser, but fuel for sure.
So this urea from Indonesia comes on top of the deal done with Brunei for its urea. So are you still short of fertiliser then? Where does that leave you?
Yeah, look, it's unsure in terms of what supplies we're actually going to be able to get, but we understand that the Indonesian deal will provide an additional 20% supply for what we require for the remainder of the growing season. So that's certainly really positive. Obviously, you know, supply is one aspect of this, but price is the other. So, you know, whilst we've got some confirmation that we are going to get a little bit more, we do need to understand what this is going to cost, because that's going to have some implications for the decisions that growers do make on farm.
Okay, so have you changed your planting plans as a result of this situation, Ash?
Yeah, we have made a few changes. I suppose, personally, we've increased the proportion of pulses that we are sowing on the back of this. In terms of cereals, you know, we still need to grow a proportion of cereals to maintain a sustainable rotation, but we're absolutely having some big conversations around what do nitrogen applications look like to make sure that we can maximise our profitability in the process.
How's all this going to affect your profits then? Margins were pretty tight with the cost of not only fertiliser but fuel, of course.
Absolutely. I mean, at the start of February, our budgets were incredibly tight. And that was before we'd seen a doubling in terms of our fuel costs and then our fertiliser costs. Well, to give an example of urea, we were looking at prices of around $800 a tonne. And now we're looking at prices of $1,450 a tonne. So to absorb those within an already tight budget is quite challenging, and everybody's, you know, around the kitchen tables across Australia is having some very tough conversations, yeah, around their rotations and working out what they should and shouldn't be planting this season.
That is Ashley Brooks, who farms at Dimboola in Victoria, speaking to Ros Childs just a moment ago about that fertiliser deal that has been struck with Indonesia. It's a quarter to one. And you are tuned in to the Country Hour. In the last week or so, you may have seen headlines about a super El Nino potentially headed towards Australia. Did you see those headlines? Pretty scary stuff. El Nino. When it arrives, it often leads to warmer than average temperatures, often leads to less rainfall. It's not good stuff. And I don't like the sound of a super one. Definitely not. But the boss of the Bureau of Meteorology says his organisation is not forecasting a super El Nino, despite what you may have seen.
Well, super El Nino is definitely not a Bureau term. That's a press term. There's no clarity at the moment about whether we're going to have a strong El Nino, a weak El Nino, or some other outcome.
Yeah, that's Dr. Stuart Minchin, the Chief Executive of the Bureau of Meteorology. You'll be hearing more from him in just a moment. But first, let's have a song. And this is a special tune this afternoon on the Country Hour. It's a special shout-out to Simone Cameron in Katherine. Today is her last day working for Cotton Australia. She and her husband are getting ready to head west for a new adventure. So we wish them all of the best. Simone was keen to hear some Lainey Wilson. So here it is. Hope you enjoy it and safe travels.
Jason Clark from Humpty Doo Barramundi. I'm the fish production manager, Eddie, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
Matt Brown with you this afternoon. A reminder, if you need to duck out into the paddock for whatever reason, you can always download our podcast and listen at a time that suits you. Now, there's been some media reports this week, including by the ABC, that Australia is potentially heading towards a super El Nino. During El Nino weather events, Australia tends to experience warmer than usual temperatures and reduced winter-spring rainfall in the nation's east. But the chief executive of the Bureau of Meteorology, Dr. Stuart Minchin, says the Bureau is not forecasting a super El Nino, and it would never use that term.
Well, super El Nino is definitely not a Bureau term. That's a press term. I think that there's no clarity at the moment about whether we're going to have a strong El Nino, a weak El Nino, or some other outcome. The best way for farmers to stay informed is to look at the long-range forecast, because the long-range forecast doesn't just take into account the Southern Oscillation Index, which is the definition of El Nino or La Nina, but it also incorporates the Indian Ocean Dipole, climate drivers, the Southern Annular Mode climate drivers, and gives our best guess as to what's actually going to happen for the season. Noting that's not always perfect and it's continually being updated. But I also urge farmers to understand that it's not a perfect science, and don't put all of your eggs in one basket. If you're, you know, you can use that as a guide, but it's an imperfect science. It will never be perfect. Farmers have to understand that it's the highest probability that we can give them, but it's not a certainty.
And we do get a lot of complaints on the Country Hour when the perception is that the forecast has been wrong. How often are you right?
Look, it's a really good question, and it depends on the different parameters. Rainfall is actually quite difficult to forecast, because it's very localised. and but we have skill in forecasting rainfall out for that eight day kind of period, and in seasonal terms we can provide seasonal forecasts. But the further out you go, the less accurate it is. That's just the reality. So the longer term the forecast is, the less chance that we're going to be perfect with those forecasts. Next day temperature, for example, across Australia, the average for last year was 92% accuracy, which is pretty high. You know, if you were footy tipping and got 92% accuracy, you'd be very happy.
So, website, how many people are using it, and have there been some improvements in the last few months?
Well, look, as I've been public about, the website was not perfect and it didn't meet everyone's needs, but it's still the most used website, public website in Australia. It is receiving about 2 million visits a day at the moment. There are more to our app, which is 6 million visits a day, but it is still a huge volume. And there are actually more people using our website than there were before the update. That said, we're still keen to work, and we're working through the comprehensive feedback we've received from the public to improve the website and address some of the issues people are still finding with access to weather information.
So has there been a drop or an increase in numbers to the website since the changes?
Well, the numbers have increased, actually, since the changes. Which is not the public perception. The public perception is that it's that's perhaps less useful, but actually more people are visiting. But we do understand that there are sectors of society that are not getting what they want from that website infrastructure, and we're working hard to fix that.
Are a lot of people still using the old website?
There are a number of people still using our registered user website, reg.bomb.gov.au, but it tends to be quite dependent on and mainly driven by the radar, and we are working at the moment on improving the radar on the new website so that it's going to be closer to what people were used to on the previous website. So that's in the works.
That's the Chief Executive of the Australian Bureau of Meteorology, Dr. Stuart Minchin, speaking to Jane McNaughton. And just repeating his opening quote to you, he said, Super El Nino is definitely not a bureau term, that's a press term. There's no clarity at the moment about whether we are going to have a strong El Nino, a weak El Nino, or some other outcome. We are 5 minutes away from the 1 o'clock news here on the ABC. If you tuned into the program yesterday, you might have heard the member for Daly, Duran Young, telling us that small businesses in his electorate were still waiting on government flood recovery grants.
They're still waiting for that Small Business Recovery Assistant grant. I mean, that was announced on the 8th of April, and yet still that grant hasn't opened up for small businesses. People along Woolyana and the Daly River region, those small businesses really need access to this money to help with the recovery cost and the damage that has been done.
So what's happening with this Small Business Recovery grant? How come dollars aren't hitting the road?
Well, that's a question for the Northern Territory government. They came out and announced this on the 8th of April for those $10,000 grants to be available for small businesses. But yet still today, when you go on the website, when you open it up, all it states is that applications will be open soon. And I just don't think it's good enough.
That's Duran Young on the program yesterday. The Territory Government has been in touch and says this Small Business Recovery Assistance grant is anticipated to go live today. Is it up yet, producer Tom? No. This afternoon. It should be up this afternoon, subject to approval of terms and conditions. So fingers crossed. One business that's been waiting for this to happen is the Douglas Daly Holiday Park. Remember, it's holding a working bee tomorrow to help clean up the holiday park. So if you can help, please do get in contact with Leanne and head along to the holiday park and help that business get back on track. Elsewhere, Ben Moore from the Matarenka Homestead says the local hot springs have been cleaned up and are now officially open. So the Matarenka hot springs, those famous hot springs, are open to the public. The homestead, well, it copped flooding as well earlier in the year, but Ben says it's all looking schmicko and he's now hoping for a big dry season.
All the ranges that we have on the ground here at Matarenka, I mean, they've moved heaven and earth to get it all cleaned back out and everything. And yeah, I mean, the whole town needed it. We've been put through the ringer, and to have one of our main attractions open again is a real draw card, and hopefully we can try and recoup some kind of season out of it.
Have you had a chance to take a dip in the pool yet? Have you seen anyone take advantage of that?
Absolutely. They opened it at 2 o'clock. At 2:01, there was a big line hightailing it down there. So, yeah, there's no flies in them, that's for sure.
Well, that's awesome. That's really, really good. Hey, I've been chatting this morning, Ben, about a three-word slogan for the tourism season to get people here. Do you have one off the top of your head?
Yeah, I did hear that. And, yeah, just get up here. You've got to see it. Like, this is probably the best time you'll ever see the whole drive up through the centre. The fishing is going to be absolutely amazing. I mean, you'd be mad not to.
Ben Moore from the Matarenka Homestead speaking to Lara Stimson. The hot springs are open. The fishing is good. You'd be mad not to head to Matarenka. All this week on the Country Hour, we've been profiling the four finalists in this year's AgriFutures NT Rural Women's Award. The awards night was held last night in Darwin at Parliament House. Who took out the top prize? I'll tell you in the second half of today's Country Hour, but now let's head to the newsroom because it is 1 o'clock.
Hello there. My name's Norm Hedditch from Taruna Proprietary Limited, and we're Spanish mackerel fishermen in the Northern Territory, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
Matt Brown with you this afternoon. In a moment, you'll hear about a native bush tea that is getting harvested on a territory cattle station and exported to the world.
The tea is an amazing tea. We've found that some of these bush foods are actually the next frontier of new flavours and new ideas for the culinary world.
You'll also find out in a moment who won the NT Rural Women's Award for 2026. Let's go to the Weather Bureau. Sally Cutter's there this afternoon. How are you, Sally?
Oh, not too bad, thanks.
The remnants of ex-tropical cyclone Myla have moved into the Northern Territory and brought some significant rain, it would seem, to Groote Island.
Yeah, or significant almost seems an understatement. They've got 171.6 millimetres, which smashed their previous April record, which was 111.6 back in 2010, but it's nowhere near that March 2024 one, which had 431 millimetres. So it has been wetter, but that's very wet for April.
So just repeating for our audience, up to 9 o'clock this morning, Groote Island received 172 millimetres. Elsewhere, Bing Bong Port got 64. Bormans had 13, Menangrita 16 in the gauge. And just looking at top-end radars this afternoon, there's a bit of rain out there, Sally.
Oh, yeah, they've gone all spotty. And probably the thing with that Groote Island was that's on top of the 30 millimetres they had to 9 a.m. yesterday.
Right, so that's 200 plus.
Yeah, it's just under 200. Oh, yeah, just over 200, but yeah. In about 36 hours. So it's been a very, very wet period out there. It looks like it was confined to Groote. It didn't look like it got too much on the mainland. But, yeah, it's the radar's gone spotty. We've had storms along the north coast during the morning. And we're even seeing some storms starting to form down through the Barkly district as well, with that big cloud band extending across the Barkly and the Gregory.
Wow. Looks like it's raining at Larimer this afternoon. When it comes to rainfall, Sally, what can the Territory expect across the weekend?
Well, for the top end, the wettest day is probably going to be Sunday, but we're looking at some up to 40 millimetres. We might see some isolated falls heavier than that, but generally, and even that's looks like they're sort of hinting it down through the Barclay as well for today. They will ease off tomorrow, but the top end, we've still got to get through this weekend before we can see the rain starting to ease off. And even if it does ease off, it's still going to be humid. Unfortunately, we can't get those big highs coming in to push the dry air up into the top end, but we do have a trough higher up in the atmosphere that's bringing dry air, which will reduce the showers and storms.
Okay, then. I'm just looking at the seven-day forecast for Berry Springs, for example. Berry Springs, the nation's capital for mango production. And across the entire 7 days, there's always a chance of a shower or two.
Yep. Yeah, even...
Just when people were starting to have their dry season parties, it's getting rained on.
Yeah, but you notice that if you're looking at the rainfall amounts, they decrease from Tuesday. So they're sort of getting less and less as we go through the week. So we still got... Because that probability is actually only a chance of... If you're looking at the probabilities, it's only the chance of 0.2 of a millimetre.
Yep.
So you don't need much to say, you're going to... So you can have a lot of... Say, it's a very high chance of getting wet, but you might only get a sprinkle or two sprinkles because you need it to get 0.2 mil.
Yep.
But so it's... The rainfall is coming down as we go through the weekend. Some of the models cleared out much quicker than the others. So, but it's really a case of just watching to what happens after this weekend. This weekend's going to be wet. After this weekend, how quickly it dries out. But as I said, unfortunately, it's drying out higher up in the atmosphere. So we may get slightly drier afternoons as it mixes down, but it's still going to be humid down where us humans reside.
Yep. All right, then. Anything else we should be aware of?
No, that's just it. Just be aware that it is going to be quite wet over the weekend. So... And through the Barclay today and Gregory today as well. Yeah. And that's not going to clear until next week. But it's just adding to the rain. And the rivers will come up, but they're not going to flood. That's probably the other thing that we're expecting.
Understood. I'm just looking at the forecast for Elliot tomorrow. Potentially jagging an inch of rain at the higher end of the possibility.
Yep.
Wow. Wow. All right, then. Thank you, Sally. Just before you go, are you a... coffee in the morning or a cup of tea sort of person?
I don't like coffee. I can't drink large amounts of tea, otherwise it makes me feel bloated. But the herbal tea is not quite so bad, but the normal tea doesn't 200% agree with me.
Okay, well, what I'll get you to do is, you can finish your duties here with the Country Hour and go and sit next to the radio, because up next you'll be hearing about a native bush tea getting harvested on a territory cattle station, and it might be the tea for you, Sally Cutter.
Oh, sounds interesting.
I'll tell you all about it next. Thank you.
Yep. All right, thanks.
G'day, this is Samantha Hussey from Olive Pink Botanic Gardens. We've got the beautiful Sturt Desert Rose growing at the moment, our beautiful NT flora emblem, and it has really, really taken off after the rain. So come along and have a look. And you're listening to The Country Hour.
It is 11 past one, and this is really cool. A native bush tea is being exported from a territory cattle station all the way to Asia. Seven Emu Station in the Gulf region is working with a bush food distributor to send Kubunyi tea to countries like Japan, Korea, and China. Exporter Jacob Davidson says the tea has a unique taste and health benefits, and the level of overseas demand is really exciting.
What we're doing is we're working with Seven Emu Station to develop export pathways for Kubunyi tea, a tea leaf that is traditionally used as a bush medicine by the Garawa people around Borroloola down to Seven Emu Station or Culvert. In all honesty, the tea is an amazing tea. It's a really, really good for you if you have a headache, sore throat or sore stomach. And we're hoping to take some of these teas to the world, because the world's sort of waiting, and we've found that some of these bush foods are actually the next frontier of new flavours and new ideas for the culinary world.
What does Kubunyi tea taste like?
I would say it tastes like health. I know that sounds terrible to say, but it's a really, really lovely clean menthol to start. But the one thing that makes Gulbunya tea quite different is it can be seeped multiple times. So when you seep it each time, it actually changes its flavour profile. So the first time's a really clean, crisp eucalypt taste. Secondly, on the second seep, it'll go a little bit darker, but you'll get more of a citrus, chrysanthemums, still quite clean. On the third taste, you'll get a really sort of strong pine needle. And then on the fourth seep, you just get a really clean, not much bitterness, but like a real earthy flavoured tea. So what we normally suggest to people is when you drink the tea, just keep your tea leaves in your pot overnight, let them dry, and then the next day you'll be able to seep it again and you'll be able to have a whole different experience with the taste.
Where are you going to be sending the tea to?
So at the moment, we are sending the tea into Sydney and Melbourne, into some corporate markets, as well as some of some Forica markets. But our main goal for volume and to ensure our continuous business is to send into the markets of Tokyo in Japan, Osaka in Japan as well, Seoul, and then into parts of Fujian in China. But China is very big, so we are taking it one province at a time.
Have you done any research into the demand for indigenous bush foods like Gulbunya tea in Asia?
A lot of the research that we've been doing has been feeling it out. The tea is a very, very wildly unknown market. What it also is a very open market. What we're trying to do is we're actually trying to create a profile for indigenous teas where we can actually showcase how some of these tea trees that are native to Australia can also be really, really well regarded around the world. And there are some plants that are already being grown as teas, but in overseas markets. So that's another funny one. Things like lemon myrtle are already being grown in countries like China and Malaysia and being sold into the common market, which is basically a position that Australia missed out on when basically lemon myrtle was moved offshore. Some of the new teas that we're coming across, like the Gulbunya, is something that I and Seven Emus are really, really passionate about protecting and keeping in Australia. And then as the market develops, being able to then continue to export and being able to be the single source. When we took it over to China, Japan and Korea in the last 3 months, we've had an extremely, extremely positive response, being a really unique flavour, a response also that we didn't expect. So more a response about, hey, would you make this into a biscuit? Or, hey, I could really see this going in a cocktail. The Japanese market was a lot more inventive with how to use it.
Seven Emus Station is in a very remote part of Australia, in the Gulf of Carpentaria. What's the process of getting bush foods like this processed and sent to consumers?
That's been part of our work over the last 2 years. The massive gap previously in the industry was that a lot of producers or Indigenous landowners would have the ability to produce the bush food, but would have to send it off in either raw form or in partially manufactured forms, which then a lot of the markup would happen in the major cities with the drying processes, with the repackaging processes and all that sort of stuff. So our sort of goal is to work with Seven Emus and develop the actual process itself so that they can control the manufacturing process and also have a lot more of the economic benefits from it.
That is bush food distributor Jacob Davidson speaking to George Nicol about Gulbunya tea from Seven Emus Station, now being exported to the world, which is really cool. And you can read more about this story online right now if you go searching for ABC Rural. It also, that article includes comments from the legend himself, Frank Shadforth from Seven Emus Station. Frank says, the old people used to use this leaf for medicine, chest pain, cold and flu. He says, we need to stop ploughing ground and putting fertilisers on when there's natural things like this going on, says Frank Shadforth. As I said, you can read all about this online now if you search for ABC Rural. All this week on the Country Hour, we have been profiling the four finalists of the 2026 AgriFutures NT Rural Women's Award. There was a special event last night at Parliament House to announce the winner of this year's award, who took out the top prize. You will find out next after a song, and this is a song request from an absolute scallywag on the Gove Peninsula. He said, Matt, you would be absolutely crazy not to play Friday Night Fever by George Strait. So here it is.
Sometimes a man just needs a breather. She knows I love her and I need her.
Friday Night Fever by George Strait. You are tuned into the Country Hour on ABC Radio. It is 20 past one.
The winner of the NT AgriFutures Rural Women's Award for 2026 is Kelly Shotton, who works as a pilot for the Consolidated Pastoral Company. Now, Kelly has designed an app to help cattle stations manage their water, and what she's working on could completely change the way stations do their bull run. It's really exciting work. This is what she told the Country Hour about the award-winning work that she is doing.
I've been with CPC now for almost 4 years, and I've been flying for two of that. I started doing bull runs out at Bunda Station, and we used to just do it all like kind of paper-based, and then I kind of realised there was a lot of information getting missed and not collated to its best ability. So I kind of like decided that there was like an opportunity to streamline it, and yeah, created this app that basically collates all the information, identifies critical issues, and stores all the historical data and trends on water points throughout a property. So yeah, put that into an app, and just need a bit more of a helping hand kind of to push it to that next level. So AgriFutures is a great stepping stone for that. Put my foot in the right direction and into doors and opportunities that I didn't have prior.
So where's that app at in terms of the development? Is it now something people are using?
Yeah, so it's just at like an initial stage at the moment. So basically I have to give you access to be able to use it. Can't get it on the App Store exactly just because it's not ready for that public spot at the moment. But yeah, we're using it at a couple of our stations at the moment, not in use at the second during the wet season, and obviously in between new staffing and everything. But yeah, looking to train up the new pilots and get it rolled out to our stations in the coming months when it starts to dry up.
So that is Kelly Shotton speaking to Sam Parry. Congratulations to Kelly. So she is the 2026 NT AgriFutures Rural Women's Award winner. She receives a $15,000 bursary to help develop her idea, and she'll be representing the Northern Territory at the National Rural Women's Award to be held in Canberra later in the year.
I'm Jess Skrills, head crocodile keeper at Crocodilus Park. We are standing in front of Belair's Lagoon with about 40 saltwater crocodiles, and you're listening to Country Hour.
And the show's just filled with winners this afternoon. I want you to meet Martin Donoghue. Now, Martin, he runs Penstock Pastoral in Victoria. And in the last few years, he has started breeding Wagyu cattle. Guess what? This week, beef from his property took out the Wagyu Industries Branded Beef Competition Grand Champion Prize. A cut of his Wagyu named the best in the land. Not bad for a newcomer to this industry. Martin had a chat to Kate Feeney.
Well, it's a big deal for us. We're pretty humbled by it. We weren't expecting to win, but what I suppose it means for us is there'll be a lot more interest in our beef moving forward. The Wagyu Association does a great job at putting Wagyu out there on the world stage and helps with genetics and everything. So the AWA's done a great job. We had a fabulous night last night at the dinner at the convention centre in Brisbane. And for us now, hopefully it opens up more markets for us now that we've got some recognition about the quality of our beef.
Tell me, what is it that your beef has? Let's actually just start with Wagyu. Remind us, what is Wagyu?
Well, they're Japanese cattle. They're known for their marbling and exceptional flavour profile in the beef. So it's a bit different to other forms of beef. It's pretty rich. Personally, I can't eat a lot of it. You can have it in small portions, but it's delicious. So, that's what Wagyu beef is. And we've been farming them only for a relatively short time. We were farming Angus cattle and even sheep and made the switch to Wagyu only about 4 years ago. So we're newbies on the block, you might say, in the Wagyu space. That was a big deal for us to win the award last night.
Yeah, you're clearly doing something right. We can't give away all your secrets, obviously. But what are the challenges when it comes to Wagyu production? You know, you took a bit of time getting there. What were your reservations?
Well, first of all, it's a bit hard. The supply chain's a bit different. It's not the kind of thing that gets sold in your local sale yard. So you really need to have access to a supply chain to participate in Wagyu cattle breeding. And that was one reservation we had. Our family has a feedlot down in Victoria, so we're able to background and feed the cattle here because they're fed grain. That's part of the diet that Wagyu cattle allows them to, the meat to marble and taste the way it does. It's grain-fed.
Mm.
They're not that easy to breed. I mean, the cows aren't the best mums compared to some breeds. They don't have great milk, so their calves can find life a bit tough at the start. But we're doing all right with it. But, yeah, they're a very fascinating breed, and the genetics are fascinating, and the end product, the quality of the beef, is fabulous.
Yeah, okay. As you said, you only like a little bit of it. If you're dealing with decent steak that costs a pretty penny, and Wagyu kind of does, it's a premium beef, you want to cook it properly. Any tips?
Oh, you've caught me with that. I can't give you any cooking tips. I can say at the Wagyu Association award dinner last night, there were lots of chefs present and there was lots of freshly grilled barbecued Wagyu beef being passed around. There were some pretty good cooks there last night. Okay. They were just sirloin steaks cut into cubes, and that was really what was on offer in the pre-dinner catch-up. So
okay.
It was a fabulous, fabulous evening, particularly if you like steak.
Well, I'm hungry. That's Martin Donoghue, Managing Director of Penstock Pastoral, and the Marble King Wagyu brand that he has created, a steak from the property, taking out the top prize in the Wagyu industry's branded beef competition. So well done to Martin and the team. It's been a big week over in Brisbane for the Australian Wagyu Association. Last night, the Elite Wagyu Sale was held. This is, again, an annual event, and I can tell you the top price at last night's sale. The top price actually went to a heifer. There was a heifer there that sold for $160,000. And you will see that animal on Landline this Sunday.
Yumbo and Cherry Crush, two of the new varieties transforming the table grape industry.
It's quite amazing and they just keep popping up.
That's Landline, Sunday 12:30 on ABC TV and streaming on ABC iView.
And the market report, Pip, how good is the market report? We'll be checking out expensive Wagyu heifers. And also, I've been sent some beautiful pictures from the Consolidated Pastoral Company, which, of course, is famous in northern Australia for its vast cattle operations. But remember last year, CPC bought Rural Inner Station on the Nullarbor Plain. Rural Inner is the biggest sheep station in the world, and CPC has just wrapped up its first round of shearing on Rural Inner. They did something like 2,600 sheep a day to get the job done. Beautiful pictures from Rural Inner, and I'll be sharing that on Landline this Sunday. Now, again, quick reminder, if you're in the Douglas Daly region, in fact, if you're anywhere in the top end, tomorrow at the Douglas Daly Holiday Park, there is a working bee taking place to help that business get back on track. We spoke to the owner, Leanne Lane, earlier in the week.
Oh, people have been wanting to do more, so we just thought we'd have a working bee. Just to sort of try and get, you know, we've still got stuff lost in bushes, there's rubbish and debris everywhere. There's still a lot of painting to be done, a lot of trees to be pulled out, a lot of gardening to be sorted. Just all the odd bits and pieces we have not had time to get to and don't have the manpower for. So we just sort of put it out there, if you've got any time on that day, happy, you know, come out for a couple of hours, do whatever we can to get the place looking tidy to push for. Hopefully opening on the 1st of May would be my ideal goal, but, yeah, see how we go at this stage. Hopefully it's looking promising. And we'll put on a bit of a barbie for everyone in the afternoon before they head back.
So if you can help, please do. That's on tomorrow at the Douglas Daly Holiday Park. And as we mentioned earlier, the Territory Government says the Small Business Recovery Assistance Grants for those impacted in the Daly region, they should be available later on this afternoon. That's it for today's Country Hour. Keep it rural.